You're listening to More Perfect Marketing, the show for business owners and entrepreneurs always on the lookout for smart marketing ideas to keep their business moving forward. And now, here's your host, David Baer.
Well, hello and welcome to another episode of More Perfect Marketing. It's David Baer here, and today I want to share a story about when I first started in the direct response copywriting world. There were a bunch of books that I read to learn about the structure of writing copy, writing sales letters, writing direct mail letters. This, by the way, was before email. And one of the books that was recommended to me was a book that I really didn't understand why somebody handed to me at the time. It was called A Technique for Producing Ideas by a guy named James Webb Young. And the idea of how do you position the type of stuff that you're writing about when you're talking about your business, things that for many businesses feel like a pretty mundane, boring topic, but we need to talk about them. Well, this book helped me start to understand different ways to introduce topics, introduce ideas to readers that were maybe a little bit out of the ordinary, but engaged them in a way that many typical pieces of writing hadn't. Well, James Webb Young is no longer with us, but somebody who knows this area incredibly well and has written an updated version and probably a much better informed version of this topic is our guest today. And that's Robin Landa, who is a professor at Kane University in New Jersey. And Kane University, and I believe it's the Michael Graves College. Is that right?
That's correct. Yes. We're Michael Graves gave us his name and his home.
Oh, I didn't know. Is it on the campus property or?
No, I wish it were. It's in Princeton.
Ah, okay. Okay. Well, I do have one connection to Michael Graves, aside from probably having bought toaster ovens designed by him that were sold at Target years ago. I live in Portland, Oregon, where he famously designed the Portland building, which was the first postmodern building in the U.S. And so that's our Michael Graves connection. But as Robin, you and I know, before we hit record, we also made a connection around another famous arts celebrity. Who was that?
Beverly Sills, the great opera diva.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. I want to talk a little bit about the idea of ideas. And I mentioned to you James Webb Young, and you said, well, you know, he wasn't actually the one who originated all of this. Why don't you give us a little bit of history on the concept of thinking through and developing ideas and why it's all, you know, so important?
Yes. Well, every industry, every discipline needs ideas. And I mean, having worthwhile ideas is very important. James Webb Young was an advertising executive, and he actually based his five-step method on Graham Wallace's four-step method. So Webb just added another step. Okay. And what some people find frustrating, now you found it worthwhile and easy to use. Some people find it frustrating because you have to do your research. That's step one. And that's true no matter what you're doing. You can't go into things blindly. And then he tells you to incubate, to allow the research to sit with you. So you let it sit for a couple of days or a week or overnight. You go for a walk, you think about something else, and you let your mind wander, and it works. Your mind is working on it while you're not sitting there forcing it at your desk. And then the third phase, which is where people find the frustration, is called illumination. And that's where the aha moment is supposed to happen. And so it's supposed to pop out of your head the way Athena popped out of Zeus's head. And that doesn't happen for a lot of people, because although incubation does work, how do you actually structure the idea in that next phase? And then the final phases are about verifying the idea and assessing and then implementing. But it's that illumination phase that people find very elusive. And that's why I codified a different structure for formulating ideas.
Okay, so let's fast forward to your new art of ideas then. Is there a formula that you have, you know, sort of behind what you're teaching?
Yes, and I codified it because it's been working for all these years for all of my students who are going into creative professions where they have to generate ideas every day. Mm-hmm. Not just once in a while, but daily. And as you know, as a copywriter, former copywriter, you have to do it all the time. So my method is called the 3 G's. And the 3 G's are goal, gap, and gain. And the goal is pretty easy. It's what you want to achieve. And a lot of people think that the goal is the idea, but it's not. It's the goal. The gap is where it gets really interesting. And for your audience who know a lot about marketing and advertising, a gap in marketing or advertising is what we would call differentiation, where you're looking to do something different than your competitors, to own a position in the consumer's mind. Mm-hmm. A gap in academic research is an area that's not yet been explored, a process that's not yet been explored, a new system, a new product. It's you're filling a void, you're moving the discipline forward. So if you think about gaps from all different points of view, you're filling in something that's missing. It's a missing piece. And then the gain is the benefit. So if you have this goal and you have this gap, is there a benefit in there for individuals, society, creatures, or the planet? And I really think that for an idea to be worthwhile, it has to address the triple bottom line, which is people, planet, and profit, not just profit alone. But that's my point of view.
Right. Okay. As an academic approach, it makes total sense. Now we're talking about marketing, and in particular, you know, our audience is small businesses as opposed to brands who have deep pockets and the desire to, you know, get their brand known. How do you apply those 3 G's to a business? And obviously it can be applied well beyond marketing. It can be applied to sort of iteration of the things that they're doing within the business, how they communicate, all of those things. But can you help sort of make it a little bit more tangible for a business in terms of how they're thinking through potential marketing ideas or promotional ideas or connection ideas with prospects or their existing customers?
Well, you can enter my framework at any point. You don't have to enter with a goal. So if you notice a pain point for your audience, you can start there. And that would kind of be a solve for giving people a benefit. So if a pain point is, let's say you manufacture kitchen tools, and a pain point for some people is they have arthritis or limited small hand coordination, maybe you need to think about addressing that pain point in how you manufacture and create the kitchen tools, or how you position them in the marketplace. Or if you're in the product development, coming up with ideas, I can give you an example. Kat Norrie was in her kitchen making sandwiches for her 3 children, and she was putting each sandwich in a disposable plastic little sandwich mm-hmm. bag. And she thought, well, this is really wasteful because these aren't recycled. This is going into toxic landfill. And since she was in the business of materials, she came up with the idea of Stasher, which is a reusable sandwich bag that can be reused 1,000 times. It was so successful that SC Johnson bought it from her. But here she was already knowledgeable about materials, but noticed something that was missing in the marketplace. It really, you can think about neglected problems that your competitors are not thinking about. You can think about going with what you know best and how you can fill a gap with that. You're looking for an insight, always looking for an insight into your audience. What do they think? What's their perception? What do we want them to think? What do they need? What do they desire? Can we anticipate a need? Can we anticipate any desires? And always really, really, really look at the audience. You can build something on an observation, being very mindful about observing and listening. You know, I always tell my students to go on Twitter and hashtag either the product or the service category and see what people are saying, see what they think. And that really could give you an insight as to what you can do better or how you can position your business.
As you were talking about that, you brought an idea to my mind about the fact that we're not necessarily inventing something with this process, but identifying something that might already exist, right?
Either way, because either way. So Andre Mocklin, when he was pitching at this new product fair in Paris, said that he wanted to reinvent the wheel. So there's a reinvention. What he actually did was, after talking to Paralympians, invent a wheelchair that was compact with an octagonal wheel that could fold. So he really did. So there's an example of reinventing something. Whereas Sal Khan of Khan Academy created something from scratch that didn't exist before and truly filled an enormous void in education, in free education. So he was tutoring his tween cousin Nadia in math because she wanted to get on the advanced math track. And he started to realize that there was a gap, that there was no free tutoring for kids. Only you could get tutoring if you paid $100 an hour, $200 an hour. Yeah. And the gain was that she got onto the advanced math track. And when the friends and family found out about it, everybody wanted his tutoring. And he left his very lucrative position as a hedge fund manager and opened Khan Academy, which, if any of your listeners have children, they probably know what a fantastic resource that is. So that's new. That's a new idea.
I guess the reason that I bring it up is, you know, working directly with business owners, introducing these concepts to them and using the types of examples that you've used can be incredibly intimidating to a business owner who thinks, oh my gosh, now I need to go out and figure out how to create my own version of Khan Academy. And very often it's possible that the ideas are simply identifying something that they're already doing, but may not be highlighting.
Exactly. So I'll give you another example. I think his name is Sharma, who was a money manager. And he realized that people don't know, if they leave a job, how to roll over their retirement money. And he started a business where he helps people do that. Mm-hmm. So here's something he knew very well that he handled for people. And he was able to create his own business just doing that.
So you mentioned the concept of positioning, and we've talked on the show many times about Al Reese and Jack Trout and their book. And we haven't really talked very much about this. There's a gang of these three guys who call themselves the Category Pirates. And if you don't know them, you need to. They're really, you know, talking about how do you identify something that's not a blue ocean opportunity, as they talk about it, but a no ocean, right? That nobody's talking about this. Mm-hmm. And the example you gave, I think, is a really good one, because it's an obvious thing. A lot of people in financial management, financial services deal with that, but maybe they don't focus their business around it or concentrate on it. I imagine that there's also things, as these category pirates have pointed out, that nobody's talking about. And I think, in my world, a classic example of that is the famous Schlitz beer story about Claude Hopkins, identifying something that was happening over in the corner of the beer production facility in terms of washing the bottles multiple times and the cleanliness. And he said, that's an angle that we can extract. How do you see those types of things in the modern era? How do we pay attention or train ourselves to pay attention to be able to identify those things and then iterate on them?
Yeah, that's a really fantastic question, because I really think that unlocking your creativity has to do with attentive observation, being very attentive and noticing things. And I think for a lot of people, it comes from what you know best. So you talk about this money manager, right, who becomes a financial advisor just for rolling over, right? It's something you know, but you can micro move into it in a niche. But I mentioned before, for a lot of people, it's a pain point. What can you solve for people that no one else is solving? It's something that needs fixing. I think what the pirates were talking about are things that are neglected, mm-hmm. or things that nobody is even contemplating because they think it may not be possible. So, for example, I forget her name, but she had a friend who was having mental health issues and having trouble affording seeing a therapist. And so this woman started mental health care for $29 a month. Mm. Now, I don't know how she managed it, but she saw an issue, yep. and she addressed it, and nobody was doing that. I mean, that's like incredibly affordable. If you're a doctor or a nurse and you notice that children have emotional issues when they go into a doctor's office or in a hospital, how can you soothe those children? Mm-hmm. Maybe you can use VR or AR. One company created a robot, actually. They didn't name it after me, but the robot's name is Robin the Robot. And this robot comes in and the children relate to it and start to calm down. So it really, you're right. I think being very observant and listening, I can't stress enough how important it is to do social listening, which is going on Twitter, going on Instagram. It's free. See what people are saying. And you know, what are they saying about the category? If you're an attorney, what are they saying about their issues with attorneys? What are they saying about lawsuits? I mean, what can you do to address their concerns?
It's an interesting point you bring up. We talk about social listening, or I call it social eavesdropping, often when we're looking for language to use to reflect back to an audience, mm-hmm. right? How they're talking about a subject. But you're using it in a different way. And I wonder if you can, you know, sort of speak a little bit further about how that might play out, what somebody might see, and then how to take that to the next step.
Right. So if somebody is complaining about pizza delivery, it's coming cold, it's coming late, the cheese is falling off. How do you address that if you're a frozen pizza company or a delivery service? Is there a way to address the people's concerns? I think Pizza Hut actually did do social listening, or Dove. And again, this is a big brand, but I'll just give you an example everybody knows about. They were thinking about, and this is like 20 years ago, a little over 20 years ago, how to start advertising Dove for women. And somebody on the team said that on social media, women talk negatively about themselves, that they don't think that they're beautiful. And that was the impetus for Real Beauty campaign, because mm-hmm. they wanted to change the conversation. And so to really understand the conversation, put your finger on the pulse of culture of what's happening, you have to do it authentically, and your company has to share those values, but that's a really great place to listen and learn. And it can be as small as the fact that the cheese on the pizza is slipping. Well, what do we do to address that? Is there a box we can create? And I think Pizza Hut actually did this. They filled potholes in a city so that the car wouldn't.
It's interesting. You bring this up, and I remember maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago in the Atlantic Monthly, there was an article sort of detailing the problematic design of pizza boxes and how it's been something that hasn't been addressed for you know, since the dawn of pizza delivery. So I a very, very relevant topic. So we are seeing, we're, you know, recording this in early 2023. There's a heck of a lot of technological innovation surrounding us. In the world that I'm in and the world that you're in, whether it's marketing or academia, you can't get away from discussion about artificial intelligence and those types of advancements. And I'm wondering, you know, how that plays into ways that we can leverage. I guess there's kind of two different, there's the upside and the downside to all of this, but ways that we can leverage technology to help us further that idea process from, you know, and we'll go back to the problematic structure of the James Webb Young, you know, five steps, where it's hard to move on. I think it was step three that you mentioned, that's kind of hard to take action on, but at the push of a button now, somebody can get that idea sparked and then figure out, how do I now connect that idea to implementation? Oh, I have, you know, not Robin the robot, but somebody else, you know, who can tell me, and I personified it by saying somebody else, it's not a person. So there's a positive, there's also the negative side to that. I'm sure that you have a lot to say on the subject, so I'll just let you go.
Well, it's really going to change the advertising industry, I think. I think they're going to start looking for people who can prompt, rather than like a copywriter writing the copy, how can you prompt the AI to write what you need? I think we're not there yet. I think there are a lot of mistakes. My husband, who is a physician, has been playing with AI to see if it can answer correctly. And it often answers incorrectly. Mm-hmm. And so I think for doctors like pathologists and radiologists right now, AI is very important. It's helping them see things that the human eye might miss. But in our business and in diagnosing, my husband as an internist and endocrinologist, it's not there yet.
Yeah.
So, but it will be. Because it's a matter of input, right? It's a matter of how much information, but you can't put in just facts and hope that it will sew it together and connect it. Mm-hmm. I mean, in China, they've been using AI to generate banner ads for a long time. And mm-hmm. those banner ads, they use algorithms to figure out what people will click on. And that works really well. But to tell a great story in advertising that's worth sharing, I don't think we're there yet.
Interesting. I mean, I think, you know, in the online advertising world, as you were talking about what's happening in China, some of the platforms do, I don't know that it's necessarily artificial intelligence, but their algorithms help show the right or the most effective pieces of a marketing campaign.
Right.
So whether it's an image or text or a headline that appear dynamically, depending on a lot of factors, from where, you know, who the recipient is, where they might physically be, what device they might be engaging on, and so on. So I think that those things do exist. And to figure out and think through and creatively approach all of that from the business's, you know, perspective, that it's sort of similar to what you were talking about in terms of, now we have to learn how to prompt AI. Well, now we have to learn how to work within the structure that exists with all of this technology to help mm-hmm. us accomplish that marketing goal, that messaging goal that we want to, in the most effective manner.
Right. Exactly right. Yeah. I mean, it's, we have to feed it and prompt it. And, at this point, it can't find an insight, but it can tell you, as you said, data-wise, it collects data really, really well and tells you what might be effective, just in the way that the old days, you could like judge on direct mail what was working or what wasn't working. But I don't think we're there yet, what it's going to replace all the creatives, but it's moving swiftly and people are really working with it. PJ Pereira, the co-founder of Pereira O'Dell, I think he's already playing with it.
Yep.
In his agency.
All right, I want to shift gears a little bit. We're talking about your one of your most recent books, but you have more than two dozen books, and to keep the content here evergreen, I won't say it's 24, 25, 26, because who knows when somebody might be listening to it. It could be more than three dozen books at that point. You're so prolific. But you've been doing this for a while. You've been working with students over, you know, course of time. And I'm curious to get a sense of where in 2023 you see the students that you're working with, their interests, their desire, the questions that they're most focused on, and how that's different from, you know, you back when you started and you know, the history of teaching that you've had.
I love Gen Z. Gen Z doesn't let you get away with anything. They are, I think, the toughest consumers ever in terms of judging a brand or a company or a small business by how authentic they are and how purpose-driven they are. And what else are you doing besides selling me something? Because they feel that if they're going to spend their money, the company better be doing something beyond just making a profit. And they really will call anybody out. They are so well informed and more political than past groups that I've more socially aware and more political. And of course, the internet helps quite a bit. I mean, they're natives to it, you know, practically born with, well, they were born with the internet. So I love them. I love the fact that they care. Their number one concern is climate change. I would say the second is social justice. So they are social justice warriors, and they care about the planet, and they care about animals, and they care about the oceans. They're great.
So how does that play into what you're seeing in terms of the way that businesses are speaking to that audience? Obviously, you know, you study this, you're looking for places where businesses are doing a good job. Potentially, you're also finding places where businesses aren't doing so well. And then we'll leave the policymakers out of this conversation, because there's a lot that could be said about that.
Right. Well, but they'll love a company like Patagonia, who puts their money where their mouth is. You know, there has to be, you can't claim something and not have the values and mission embedded in your company. They'll go look and they'll find out what the BS is. So they really would rather spend their money where they feel that the company is actually doing some social good or some practical good for the world. You know, they like the business model of Tom's Shoes or Warby Parker, or, you know, where they see social good being done. Bombas, but they do like companies, and or even, you know, they'll even look at a company like Coca-Cola to see what they're doing about water. You know, so you really can't make a claim unless you're doing what you're saying. You're walking the talk.
So I'm thinking back to, you know, 2020 and the summer of all kinds of problems that we had that year. And this is not necessarily small businesses, though I'm sure that many participated, but larger brands wanted to demonstrate that they were actively taking a stance. Some of it was genuine and met with the business's culture, you know, historically. Much of it was not. What have you seen in the years, you know, after that, in terms of changes to the way that those businesses have been treated or anything else? Since I'm not tapped into this world and you are, you probably have seen some result of, you know, that those actions.
Yeah. So, I mean, I can think of a really interesting example of Good Humor. So Good Humor was bought by Unilever. So all those ice cream trucks are still out there, but they're not under the Good Humor umbrella. They're a brand of Unilever. And somebody on TikTok, I think it was, exposed the fact that, and I didn't know this, that the Good Humor jingle is based on a racist song based on Turkey in the Straw. And as soon as she did that, you know, Gen Z and Gen A were all over it. Now, Good Humor and Unilever could have reacted in a number of ways, but what they did do is say, well, we're getting rid of that jingle. and they hired Raza, I think RZA, a Black artist, musician, to write a new jingle, and not only make it available to the Good Humor folks, but to anybody who had an ice cream truck. So they made it open source, but they immediately addressed it. And I mean, Unilever has good values and follows through on things, but I thought this was a really interesting reaction to what Gen Z was doing.
It's incredibly powerful, I guess, when you know your audience well, you know what matters to them, and internally you share those values, that you have the ability to take actions like that. Now, let's circle back to where we started our conversation, because somebody had to recognize the situation, recognize that there was an opportunity, and then figure out what to do about it. And that feeds right back into your 3G model of how to come up with the idea to address that situation.
Right. And that was, I think it was Edelman Agency that worked on that with Good Humor. Yeah, no, I mean, there's a gap there, right? And we don't have a jingle anymore. We've got bad PR. What would be the gain for the most people? And the goal was to do something good and fill that gap.
It's such a pleasure to talk to somebody who's thinking critically about this stuff, observing what's going on, teaching the next generation how to play in this world that's ever changing. If folks are interested in learning more about you and the many books you've written, where can they find out more about you?
They can go to robinlanda.com, and I should tell them that I donate most of my royalties to student scholarships and to humanitarian crises and issues.
That's excellent. Yeah. Robin Landa, professor at Kane University in New Jersey, thank you so much for hanging out with us and chatting. This has been incredibly enlightening.
Oh, thank you. It's an honor, David. Thank you.
Indeed. Hey, folks, if you know somebody who could benefit from listening to the conversation you just heard, please, by all means, share it. In the meantime, my name's David Baer, and we'll see you back here on another episode of More Perfect Marketing real soon. Take care.
You have been listening to More Perfect Marketing. Now you can put what you've learned here into practice when you join the free listener community at mpmcommunity.com. That's mpmcommunity.com. When you join today, you'll receive David's collection of 26 smart marketing cheat sheets to help you master your marketing, plus additional business building training. So don't delay. Join us today at mpmcommunity.com. We can't wait to welcome you.